Hello, Mr. Zondel.
Yes.
Yes, it's Ellen Hubert from Broadcast News calling back.
Right.
Okay. I was hoping to get your reaction to the Supreme Court ruling today.
Well, I have not seen it, so I can only comment from media reports.
Okay.
I want to make one thing clear, that I was not charged under the Hague Law as the media frequently reports. So my comments are not special pleading, self-interest, or whatever, you know?
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand.
Okay, good. I was charged under the false news section, which is different from the Hague Law section.
Okay, well then we might as well discuss a question I would have had. This won't affect your appeal then. I know you have an appeal.
I think psychologically and maybe philosophically, yes. You see, because if there is a spirit of lack of freedom of speech rather than affirming of freedom of speech, naturally that also affects the false news law. So, you know, I mean, psychologically speaking, I think it does affect my decision, yeah.
Okay, but would you still be pressing ahead with your case then?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. On principle. You know, because the Law Reform Commission in Canada, in the case of the false news law already 3 years ago, said that it offends against the Charter of Rights, that is archaic, that it should be removed and should be replaced by something else. Now, very similar words were used by the Supreme Court of Alberta in the Kickstra case. And now, of course, the Supreme Court in Canada apparently has upheld the the section concerning hate literature. However, if we have a moment, I think we ought to go back on this hate law, the history of it. I have no idea how old you are. I was around in Canada when this law was agitated for, and how it came to be, I don't know if you remember this, because it has a bearing on why the hate law is the darling of the political establishment and people that are powerfully connected politically. In the 60s, there was this agitation against what they called hate mongers. And then in 1967, 68, I think it was, they appointed what they called the Dean Maxwell Cohen, the Maxwell Cohen Commission, studying hate literature. And out of that report that was promulgated after the hearing, we received the hate law. And when it was voted on in Parliament, very few Canadians know that very few MPs voted for that particular passage of the law. However, chickens that they frequently are, many of them just didn't show up in the House of Commons. So I think it was less than a third of the MPs found it necessary to be there to voice either their for or against votes. So this is how this law came into being. At the time when it was formulated, the little debate that resulted was largely coming from writers and columnists inside Saturday Night Magazine, which was then the intellectual magazine in Canada. And one lawyer notably opposed it. That was the Jehovah's Witness civil rights lawyer, Glenn Howe. He fought very hard against the establishment of the hate law. Now, as far as I'm concerned, as a German, I had always hoped that we as an ethnic community would get relief by being allowed to use the hate law against those in the media, in education, and in politics who are constantly and have been constantly vilifying the German-Canadian and the German ethnic group with wartime propaganda. For instance, one of the largest school books that my children took in high school said until quite recently that the Germans boiled bodies to make fat out of these cadavers. Now, this is a school book that was in vogue here, used across the country, and clearly, now Yehuda Bauer from the Yad Vashem Museum in Israel has said the Germans are not guilty, were never guilty of boiling cadavers for fat, and yet our school children here were used to this kind of education. And then we had the Edgar Bronfman case, where he gave a speech in Montreal, I think it was a year and a half ago, in which he called Austrians a nation of dirty dogs. Some Austrians, whom I personally know, I've seen the correspondence, went to the police and tried to have Bronfman charged with promoting hatred against an identifiable group, to wit, the Austrian people, because the whole nation was called the nation of dirty dogs. Yet, nobody in Canada was willing to apply the hate law against Bronfman. And then we here in Toronto tried to use the hate law against Elie Wiesel, who had published a book, I think Legends of Our Time, in which he says, and I quote, that every Jew should keep a corner of his heart alive for hatred against what the German is, what the German was. Now, this book was sold in the largest bookstores in Canada, freely imported from the United States. Again, there was not a justice of the peace, not a police department that was willing to lay charges. How do I know? Because I know two people who tried it. Then there was a case against Saul Lidman, who said there were 3,000 war criminals in Canada. Well, it turns out the list has been shrinking continuously. Who was upset? The people in the ethnic community, such as Hungarians and Germans and so on. Again, nobody would lay any charges. And so what I'm saying to you is this. The Supreme Court has now reaffirmed that the hate law is constitutional. Now, I want to know if the ethnic communities that are affected by media-borne hatred, World War II war propaganda, posing as history, will we Austrians and Germans and Ukrainians, Slovaks, Hungarians, will we now have a chance to see the law applied equally? Or is it going to be like it has been in Canada since the introduction of this pernicious law, a kind of selective prosecution? That's what troubles me in the law.
Okay, Mr. Zundel, so you would say you don't object to the law that much as long as they start applying it equally. Then.
Exactly. Right now, what we have had the hate law for is selective prosecution. You could get away, literally, with vilifying whole countries and descendants of, for instance, the German nation. Germans are the third largest ethnic group in Canada. We have not enjoyed the protection under this legislation. I want to see, now that this law has become alive, because three people are now today going to go and have to check into Canadian jails because of this law.
Okay, I was speaking to somebody from the B'nai B'rith, and they said they thought that there would be a lot more prosecution.
Exactly.
Now that the law is upheld.
Right.
So you expect more prosecution from both sides then?
No, I don't. I think that the trend in Canada will continue, where organizations like B'nai B'rith, who act like private Gestapo organizations with a hidden agenda, will use this law and find willing prosecutors and willing politicians to put pressure on people to have fashionable prosecutions. In other words, the little people in Canada will be hounded by this pernicious legislation and now reaffirmed by the Supreme Court, and the big fish like Edgar Bronfman and Elie Wiesel and others will go scot-free, because that's the Canadian reality. So I'm hoping against hope. I've been for 32 years in this country. I've been dragged through this country's courts for the last 9 years, and I am a very mature person when it comes to have great expectation out of the Canadian system, you know? So I consider that repression in Canada will continue at an accelerated pace, and you just said that B'nai B'rith is expecting lots more prosecutions, and because they will be the ones to initiate it. You can take my word for it. And all broadcasters and all people who have different opinions, not this quiet of the intellectual graveyard that Canada has become, where every writer, broadcaster, and thinker has got a Damoclean sword hanging over his head, like Professor Rushton can do research. Expert witnesses who come to my trial, for instance, are pounded, persecuted. All these people are going to be affected by this law.
So you think it would be better if they had just scrapped the law then?
No, if they, I can, as a victim of media, government-approved and obviously supported hatred, Ernst Zündel, as a victim of hate literature and hate propaganda, media-born, am quite understanding that there is a need in this society for protection against vilification and so on. But then they should find a mechanism that makes all people equal before the law, not give some people special access to the law. How can it be that a man like Bronfman can call the Austrians a nation of dirty dogs, insult a large community in Canada, and somebody doesn't even go through the routine of having a preliminary investigation? It is blocked at the very first instance. And when Elie Wiesel's book clearly says every Jew ought to have a corner in his heart for unadulterated hatred against not what the Nazis were, but what the Germans were. Not the word Nazi, the Germans. And so, I say to you, we are in for tough times. Not me, because I know this law inside out. I have no illusions what Canada is like. And I'm just kind of wondering about all these people out there who get their popular culture from American television, where they have First Amendment protection and freedom of speech. There's going to be 99% of the Canadian public deceiving themselves that all is well in the state of Canada. Well, I'll tell you, what we have is a banana republic in the north. That's really it.
Okay, so what you're saying, the problem then is not with the law, but with the way it's being applied.
Number one, the way it was written. You see, the way it was written was very clever, that it gave the Attorney General the right to prosecute or not to prosecute. An Attorney General is a political person, is a political appointee. So, it brings politics and political manipulation and political consideration into a courtroom where it has no place.
Okay, well then you would agree with, for example, Alan Borovoy of the Canadian Civil Rights, or Liver, whatever he is.
Yeah, I know.
I can't remember the exact title, but anyway, he's saying that the law is not specific enough. It's
exactly right. This is the one time when Alan Borovoy and Ernst Zündel agree totally.
Okay, so when you're calling this a pernicious law, that's what you mean then?
I'm saying that it leaves the courts open to enforce political judgments and decisions. And that's never a good thing, because then we have popular ideas, unpopular ideas. Popular people, unpopular ideas and people. And the people who are unpopular at this moment, then they're going to be hounded. Right now it's so-called neo-Nazis, racists and so on. Who is going to say tomorrow, when Canada awakes from this insanity of their immigration policy, that there are not going to be other groups that are going to be unpopular? And then what are we going to do? Hound certain ethnic groups because they are unpopular? We have had it before in this country, you know, where Japanese were put in concentration camps because they had yellow skin and slanted eyes. It was a purely racist policy. So Canada, however holier than thou they like to pretend they are not immune from using these laws. They have done it before, they are doing it right now, and they will continue to do it in an increasing and a downward spiral. I see for this country nothing but repression ahead. And the method used will be this law and other laws that will follow on its heel. Believe me, you're young enough to see it.
Okay, Mr. Zündel, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye.